That wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
This is KBOO Community Radio. We're in our fall drive, exploring the sounds of democracy. Here at KBOO, we believe that, much like democracy, community radio is an ever-evolving experiment. As the needs of our communities grow and change, we remain true to our mission of uplifting underrepresented voices, playing local musicians, and keeping you updated with local news and current events. Show your support by donating right now at kboo.fm/give. Text KBOO to 44321 or click Donate in the KBOO mobile app.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop, a monthly youth-centered podcast about how artists do their work and make a living. I'm Nicole Cabrera.
I'm Erica Thomas, and we are joined today by another student, Ayana Ross. Welcome, Ayana. And we're so pleased to be hosting a musician from Portland, Poppy Fimbres. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be on. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's exciting to have you here. Kind of to just kick it off, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Poppy Fimbres. My actual name is David Fimbres, but I was given the nickname Poppy a long time ago by a bunch of musician homies about 15 years ago. So it kind of stuck. It was more like a term of endearment back then by a bunch of Latino homies. And it kind of stuck around, which is hilarious and silly at the same time. My mom always jokes about it, you know, because my family are Latino. And my mom's always like, mijo, ¿por qué te llaman Poppy? She's like, why do they call you daddy? I'm like, it's like a term of endearment. It's sweet. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, that's cool. Yeah. So I've been in Portland since 99. I moved up here from Los Angeles. And I've been here for 21 years now. And I've definitely seen this city change and become a whole different entity within itself over time. And my music has changed a lot. And when I first came here, I didn't have any bands. And I think right now at this point, I'm up to like 16 bands, which is kind of ridiculous. So
16 like active bands or 16 bands in total so far?
16 active bands.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because of the pandemic, a lot of them definitely a lot of them chilled out, mm-hmm. which is understandable, you know. So, but, you know, during this whole pandemic, there was definitely a handful that we still got together and wore masks and just played isolated and just, you know, still try to get some stuff going.
Yeah. And how long have you been like in bands for, like starting when?
At the age of, I think my first band was like at the age of 8 or 9. Oh. And it was just, you know, I was really into Nirvana back then. And, mm-hmm. and I was just trying to just do like just rock music, you know, just my friend had a drum kit in their garage in LA. So I was just figuring out how to bash on drums as a little kid. My first instrument was piano, though, at the age of 5. So from there, I went to play flute. And eventually, I started playing drums like around 8 or 9. So
yeah, I actually used to be a flautist in fifth grade.
Oh, that's awesome.
For like
that's,
1 year. But that's then I amazing. Broke my arm, and then I still played with my arm broken, but yeah.
did you play for band?
I don't know. It was just like elementary school. It's just like we had.
Oh,
like,
it was elementary whole, like, school.
Yeah, elementary school. Wasn't middle school yet. I quit.
Got it.
I started middle school, but yeah, I
got
couldn't.
It.
I couldn't. But no, yeah. So you played piano, and now you're playing the drums, correct?
I mainly play the drums. Yeah, I still play a bunch of other instruments. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I'm more known for.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some other instruments that you wish you could play that you probably don't play, or something that you could master better?
Oh my God, I would love to play the double bass, the double upright bass. Just something about an old big old jazz bass just is so beautiful and so somber, you know. And it's one of those instruments that is so cumbersome too, and it's so massive. Mm-hmm. And I always thought it was a beautiful instrument. That's one instrument I've always wanted to learn. I guess it's never too late, right?
No, it's never too late.
It's never too late.
So, growing up, I actually read about how your mom put you in a lot of like youth music programs and stuff. I know, like from experience and from other friends of mine, like growing up in a Latino household, it can be a little hard to want to do stuff that's creative because it's not generally what your parents want you to, like, you know, go after. So how was it for you to grow up with a mom who, like, encouraged and supported you going towards this artistic direction?
Well, I grew up, like, in the heart of Los Angeles. Like, I grew up right by Pico Union. So in the 80s, that was extremely harsh. It was an intense growing up situation for me. Like, I've seen people, like, take their last breaths. I've been shot at as a child just because I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. So my mom, she saw all this, and my dad too, but my mom was more supportive in that regard. And I'm 3 out of 4 kids, and my 2 older siblings were in rival gangs growing up. And, you know, they're always getting into trouble. And my mom saw that. So when I was born, she's like, no, we're not going to have this kid just fall into the cracks of like a broken society as well. So, you know, she put me into like rec school into rec classes, you know, when I was little, and I loved it. And until I realized during the pandemic, music is absolute therapy for me. You know, it really just cleanses my heart and my mind and my soul, you know. So it's been hard during this pandemic for sure. But you know, once I started playing music as a kid, I started to really, really appreciate this part of music, because none of my other siblings or no one in my family are musicians. I was the only one. So it was kind of odd too, because I couldn't relate to anyone in my family. So I was just kind of doing everything on my own terms, and just doing it, slowly learning in my own way.
And you mentioned that your first like band was when you were 8. Can you talk a little bit about how you sort of joined bands and how you started to just join all these different bands throughout the year?
That's an easy answer. That's just straight up friendship. That's homies. You know, it's like being in a band is truly like being in a relationship. You really need the push and pull. You need to be understanding. You need to listen. You need to be compassionate. There's so many emotional aspects to being in a band. Like, it's, well, for me it is, because I'm like 100% in, even with all of them. You know, it's all an emotional, you know, an emotional movement for me. So even with my first band, it was just like my really good friends, and we all just eventually learned instruments on our own. And it was my idea. I was like, let's start a band. You know, let's do something fun. You know, because, you know, just growing up, I was listening to Nirvana and Sebado and a lot of rad bands. And I was like, man, I want to play drums. I want to go crazy. So, and luckily my mom was like, yeah. So once I eventually was able to buy a drum, or my family bought a drum kit for me, and I just played it in a backyard because we had no garage. So I played it under an orange tree in the backyard. It was pretty awesome, except when the neighbor.
Oh, that was beautiful.
It was pretty cool, and it was just a crappy drum kit, like with a brick in front of it, and I didn't even have a throne to sit on. I think I was sitting on like milk crates. You know, it was just very extremely DIY, without even being cool about it.
mm-hmm. I love what you were talking about how being in a band or being in bands for you is like a relationship, you know? And I think like one of the signature things I notice about all the projects that you do is, one, that you work with a lot of really talented and strong and amazing women, and that you often, during your shows even, will acknowledge like, oh, there's these powerful women that I, you know, get to collaborate with. And I think that's so beautiful and kind of uncommon in the rock world a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I have like so much respect also for like the way that it's obvious how your collaborations are, like from your stage presence and from the results of your collaborations. So I just wondered if you wanted to say anything about, you know, the importance of collaboration specifically for you.
Absolutely. Yes. The importance of collaboration is to, for me with Musical.ly, is to create something new, to create, you know, because there's already a specific note, like the B flat. That note has been played so many times, but how do you play it with certain people gives it a different element, a different tone, a different movement. You know, it rings differently. So I really like to collaborate with people that like to push the limit. I really like to, like, I love collaborating with people that I have yet to collaborate with, and I just know we'll learn something new from playing together. And that's definitely the most important aspect of it. And then sometimes it doesn't work, and that's great. You know, sometimes it's like, oh, you know what? I got too busy. You got too busy. Oh, you know, just, you know, and that's natural. That's just the world around us, you know. Mm-hmm. But when, you know, when it's something clicks and it sounds and it feels great, it's just absolute bliss.
What is something really important that you've learned over the years after collaborating with so many people? Like, if you were to give someone advice on how to start a band or what it's like to be in a band, this is the most important thing you have to know, what would it be?
Oh my goodness, that's a great question. Okay, well, it depends. It depends if you're a musician who you just want to play as opposed to a musician who you want to play out. If you want to play shows, it's a total different approach to playing music and an approach to like having your music being heard. If you're just learning and you're just playing music for yourself, I would say, like, be completely open, play the instrument upside down. There's no wrong way to play an instrument, you know, and that's the cool thing. That's the great thing about music, is that there's no wrong way to do it, you know. And then, so on the other flip of that coin, if you want to start playing shows, then there's definitely some etiquette that is very helpful to musicians, you know, and I have a lot of like bands that are that, you know, startups, and I love playing those tiny little shows, like, you know, just tiny little basement shows, or, you know, because it kind of reminds me of like who I am and where my roots are from, you know, because like it's fun to play a sold out show in this big old venue and blah, 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 blah. That's awesome. Green room. Cool. But I also love like putting myself back down and being like, hey, yo. We all started from scratch, you know, so I always try to have up and coming bands in my bills, just so it could be like, you know, everyone needs to cut their teeth somewhere. Everyone needs to start, learn somewhere. So that is really important for me, to have like this inclusivity of as a musical community, you know, like everyone deserves a chance to be heard, you know? So I think that answers that.
More about your music. You listened to a lot of Nirvana growing up. What are some other influences that you think have sort of shaped the sound of the music that you
play? My major influences are jazz, tropical music, and cumbia. Like, I really grew up, because my mom is super Mexican, and my dad's Chicano. So my mom, like, and my mom, we're from Juarez, Chihuahua, so we're like northern Mexican. So like, I listen to a lot of like Tejana music and fast, like quebradita and like mariachi music a lot growing up. And that was just blaring around the house, or, you know, just around the city, you know, because I was just in a Latinx neighborhood growing up. And then my dad was really into jazz and soul and classic rock, you know, so it was a total different element of that. And I think I just feel fortunate that my mom was able to, like, you know, because she always reminded us siblings. She said, never forget where you come from. You know, never forget that you're Mexican, you know. And that always stuck with me, you know. And then my dad would be like, my dad never spoke to me in Spanish. He only spoke in English. My mom only spoke in Spanish. And that's not, it was just coincidental that way. And my dad was always just like, yeah, listen to this crazy new shit I'm listening to. Or my dad would be like, you want to smoke some weed for the first time, son? Or, you know, it'd be very different. They're very interesting aspects. And I think me growing up, I still am appreciating, like, specifically jazz really, like, opens my mind into possibilities that could never happen with music, you know, because it's such a bizarre world to me. And I always saw, like, that tropical and that cumbia and that merengue music has always been in my heart. And when I moved to Portland 20 years ago, I missed listening to my cultural music, you know, because it's still predominantly white city, but back then it was even whiter, you know, because there's more, like, people of color here now. But back then it was predominantly white, and I was missing talking my language, or like missing just listening to like Mexican music being blared out of a truck, a spray painted truck, you know. So,
well, I think you do a really good job of adding like your Hispanic culture to your music, because honestly, like,
thank you.
Personally, like, I'm not, my brain just doesn't click with a lot of the music that's out there like nowadays, but after I listened to your music, it just like really resonated with me. And you know, I'm really glad I get to do this podcast, because, you know, I discovered a new artist that I really like, and he shares my culture background, and I think it's really cool.
That's awesome. And, yeah, thank you. That I rules. Thank yeah, you.
But,
thank you.
But over the years, how have you had to adapt your music and the way you make music?
Fortunately, I never really changed the way I wrote music, was because I always wrote music for myself. I never had the desire to go big or be like huge, you know, like that's like such a classic, just cliche old school way of thinking, like, oh man, I'm gonna make it big, I'm gonna be, you know, touring all over the world and all that, which you can tour, but you know, sometimes it takes a toll on your mind and, you know, your profit for sure. But what was they saying? Oh man. Oh, so I feel really fortunate because I was always able to play the music and write the music that I wanted to do, you know. And granted, I was definitely influenced by like grunge and, you know, psych rock and cumbias and soul music. I definitely was influenced by it, but I wanted to create my own sound within that, you know, wanted it to be its own thing. And I never had any fear or worry that no one was going to like it, because I'm just like, if I like it and if I'm working with people that they're down with it, let's do it. So what? Let's just record it. It's going to be fun and release it. You know, that's why like a lot of my bands, like Sun Angle and Wet Fruit, like they're very specific, weird bands, but you know, people love it, you know? So it's always a really fun surprise when people are like, I really like that album. I'm like, oh wow, really? Because that is weird. So thank you.
Yeah, I think, no. Yeah, like my favorite song that I think this would be a good segue into playing one of your songs. My favorite one was from your debut album with Sabila. The song Líneas. So I really like that song a lot. And yeah, we can play the song right now.
I love it. There you go. Bam, bam. with that album with Savila, with Risa and Fabiola, those ladies already had like a bunch of those songs already written, and I was like their fourth drummer. They asked me a long time ago, and I was like, I'm too busy. And they're like, all right. And then some of my bands like chilled out, and then after a year, they asked me again. They're like, yo, just come play drums. I'm like, okay, I will. So then I went and I rehearsed with them, and I was like, yo, this is awesome. You guys sound great. And then they're like, you're not bad yourself. So, you know, we tried it again, and then it really solidified there, because those songs are a couple of years old from that first debut album. Mm-hmm. So we just released an EP last week, and we are already working on another album right now. So we're like, we're staying busy. Our goal is to tour Europe soon. Ooh, so
how is touring like, especially since you're like such a like you tend to like be on a smaller scale. So what is it like to go touring?
Yeah, I think what it is that, you know, I'm going to be 41 years old. I can't believe it. Viejito right here, man. Viejito. But I really am homebodied. I'm a homebody person. Like I love, even when I was young, I did a few tours and it wasn't fun for me sleeping on the floor of someone's house. You know, like it's punk and cool, but for me, I was just like, nah, that's not my thing. Like, I want to sleep in my bed, you know. So, you know, actually, now that I think about it, that might be one of the reasons why I'm in so many bands. Just so it keeps me busy in the city. Because then I get, like, before the pandemic, I was playing, like, 14 to 16 shows a month. So I was, like, playing, like, every other day. But with different bands, you know. So it was awesome. But it definitely, I didn't realize how tired I was. Because then the pandemic hit, and I'm like, oh, that means I have to chill. And then so, like, the first 6 months, I'm like, this is awesome. And then after that, I'm like, I'm done. This sucks.
Yeah, I think we all felt that way, you know? Like, I was out for school. I was like, yeah. Extended spring break, yay. And I'm like, when is spring break over?
I know. When can we go back? Yeah, precisely.
But I think more from, like, a logistical standpoint, what is it like to tour? Like as a small like group, I think more what I'm trying to ask is like financially, how does that work? Like, because you're a full-time artist and you have to pay the bills. How does exactly that work?
Well, specifically with Savila, we've been very fortunate. You know, we've been so fortunate that just the music community across the country has really just embraced us and like helped us out with really great shows. So we just have to like have certain guarantees to make it worth our while to fly, to rent a car, to pay gas, to pay ourselves for lodging. There's so many variables. It's kind of ridiculous. It's like a business it's a real business, you know, when you think about it. Because then we're on stage, we're like, oh, this is so much fun. And then after that, you're like, okay, we got to go to a hotel. We got to wake up at 7 a.m. to drive to the next city, you know. So it's a regiment for sure. But I really enjoy playing Europe. Specifically more than the States, because in Europe, almost every venue has a place for you to sleep above the venue, and they treat you like royalty. Like they ask, like, do you have any dietary restrictions? We're gonna home cook you a meal. You need to come early and relax. And it's just like here in the States, they're like there's two drink tickets, and you go pee around the corner in the back or something. You know, I'm exaggerating, but that's not far from the truth, you know, certain places when you're just touring in these small towns across the country here.
That's really cool. I did not know that. That's really cool. Maybe I should go tour Europe.
Yeah. 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 It's not that hard. It's a beautiful experience. Nicole, what do you play?
Me? I don't play anything.
Oh, not yet.
I just want to tour for the experience.
Oh, I love it.
No, but I used to play a little bit guitar, not very advanced. I don't know, what else do I play?
Aside from the flute.
Yeah. Like three chords that I can play on the flute. I don't know, I like to mess around, just like, what is it?
Oh, garage?
Garage band, there we go.
Yeah,
I just like to, you know, make little sounds on there sometimes, but that's about it.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you get like a good like instrument and you get like a good sort of progression and stuff, and then you don't know what to add onto it.
Like, yeah, it's
like,
yeah.
You can get like in a roadblock, which sucks.
Yep. Sucks. Yeah. But yeah, for sure. I know a lot of our homies have had a lot of roadblocks during the pandemic. I know some friends that haven't even picked up their instrument. They're just like, nah, man, I can't. I'm just like, woo, I don't know, man. I just feel fortunate that I have a basement here. My wife and I have a basement in our house or studio, so we get to play all the time. So I feel very fortunate. Feel very fortunate to have that.
Yeah. How, with your music, you play more like kind of rock. You also do other stuff, but has it been easy for you to sort of incorporate your sort of heritage and different elements that maybe might not normally be a part of that? So does that make sense?
Yes, it has been. It's been very fortunate and very welcoming, you know, because, you know, a lot of the bands I'm in, I always want to represent the community. You know, I want like a white homie, a Latinx homie, you know, female identifying homie. I want it to be diverse. I'm just tired of seeing these like all white boy bands. I'm just like, you know, come on, y'all. Let's diversify this. You know, we're all under the same sun. You know, we all need to give each other love. I've been very fortunate to be able to incorporate my Latinx cultura and my tropical style into the music. You know, I feel very fortunate that I'm able to do that without any recourse or without anyone saying, oh, that's different, that's weird, what's up with that? You know, people are like, oh, that's different, that's weird, what's up with that?
Uh-huh.
You know,
it's like, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Now that we're talking about weird stuff, I think it's important to always acknowledge the fact that Portland is weird. Keep Portland weird. what drew you to Portland?
Yeah. I was 19 years old, and it was the fact that it was like cold and rainy and forested here. I was like, that sounds awesome. Because I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and then my family are from Juarez, Chihuahua. So I would go from like beautiful sunny LA, and then when I would go down and hang out with my family in Mexico, it'd be like dry, desolate desert, big ass city. So I was like, man, I want a change. I want some heavy, thick forests. You know, I want some swampy. I want to see some mushrooms on the ground. You know, so so that you know, and you know, Portland back then, there wasn't much going on, but I was able to find a job here as a social worker. So I was like a Latinx liaison. And that was a crazy job. So I did that for a couple of years when I first moved here. And that was awesome. But when I first moved here, I moved out to 102nd and Sandy. Because coming from Los Angeles, I was like, oh, it's only 100 blocks away from downtown. That ain't That's easy. 100 blocks. And then I moved here. I'm like, what? Where's downtown? I was so spoiled by living in Los Angeles, where it's such a huge city, you know. And then I came to Portland. I'm like, oh, Portland's tiny. It's adorable. And I still, you know... Yeah, it's still adorable in its own crazy way.
Ayana, I want to make sure that we're making space for you to ask questions if you like. You're welcome to jump in or...
Well, I did want to ask about the Homie Fest.
Oh, yeah.
So, like...
Of course.
Because of COVID, it couldn't happen last year. But, like...
Correct.
As we're slowly opening up and moving on, what are the plans... for the Homie Fest?